This is WGN Radio. John Williams here. Thanks for dialing in on the Wintrust Business Lunch with John Beaver, president of Phase 3 Advisory Services, registered investment advisory firm and registered principal with Osaic Wealth, Inc. John, capital R or little r on the recession watch. What's your thought about that today?
Well, it's a little r, but do not erase the r. It's still a ways off, most likely. We're seeing only a few early warnings, but you know, we're not out of the woods yet because of the timing. You know, we think that as soon as the interest rates go up, then there's a recession. Actually, it's a bit of a delay, and we're still seeing that the rates are rising. Fed just raised them this week. They've said higher for longer. And as a result, stocks are now getting a little bit pricey, so consider maybe getting defensive. Inflation is moderating, which is good, but as Jay Powell said, well anchored. So there's still a risk of maybe something breaking as they raise rates. And today's stealth issue may actually be the yen carry trade. Don't know we want to get into that, but the big thing is the recession, and where are we in this? And we'll want to review the map to the recession, actually.
Well, is the hard part, if you're a Fed governor, the idea of figuring out what the lag is and what the net effect is?
Absolutely. And one of their biggest challenges is that they don't really have a lot of control over the inflation issue. A big part of the inflation issue is actually the government spending, overspending. I shouldn't say they're spending, they're overspending when they borrow so much money. And the Fed's tool is not telling Congress, hey, cool it. The Fed's tool is raising interest rates, which is really kind of a blunt instrument to use this. So they use other things to kind of figure out what they're supposed to do, and it's these indicators. And actually, let's talk about that. So the map to a recession looks like this. It starts with the Fed raising rates, and we get an inversion of the yield curve. That's where your short-term rates are higher than your long-term rates. Now, we can live with that for a while, but usually in 12 to 18 months after that, then stocks start to sell off. Now, the inversion only occurred last October, so we're not even at a year yet. That'll come October of this year. Then about 6 months after the stock market, that's when we hit the recession. So, you know, if we had kind of the average timing, we'd be looking at maybe April for a recession. You know, no way to predict it, but we're just using history here. And there have been 12 interest rate inversions since World War II. Yeah. 11 times there's been a recession, so it's not a guarantee that we're going to have a recession. And so that's a scoop. And then what does the Fed look at? Well, they're looking at the economic indicators, and those are still looking pretty good. Pending home sales up a little bit. This is stuff from this week. The new listings down a little bit. The GDP for Q2 up at 2.4%, and that's improving a little bit. The Fed's GDP now, which is a predictor of GDP, is still looking at 2.4%. Unemployment, initial claims down a little bit. That's good. Continuing claims dropped a little bit. So all this stuff actually looks pretty good. So if we look at that, we're not seeing a recession. However, some of the early warnings, bank loan growth is slowing. That's normal before a recession. Credit card debt is increasing. And some of that is coming from food and energy purchases, which is not good because that's consumption that's getting put on a credit card and not paid off. But overall, credit growth is slowing. That's also an indicator. Quality is dropping. Credit defaults are getting back to pre-pandemic levels, and we're seeing late pays increasing. And the bottom line of this is, yeah, even though it feels like we're watching paint dry, waiting for a recession, the business cycle has not been repealed.
I wonder, though, if you say the 11 out of 12 times after an inverted yield curve, you have a recession, and maybe that sample size is compelling, 12 and 11 times it happened, but this one is unique, isn't it? It's on the heels of a pandemic. We have an extraordinary amount of pent-up demand for home sales that when the interest rates come down, maybe we're going to unleash this wave of new purchases and the economy will stay robust. And the economy is doing very well right now. And the markets are recovering. I'm trying to push back on what I'm hearing is a little doom and gloom from you.
Yeah, not so much doom and gloom, because I would look at this and say a little recession would actually be a good thing just to kind of really try and cool inflation. And yes, it's not a guarantee that we're going to have the recession. There was at one time that we didn't. And this is very similar to the 50s and 60s, 1950s and 60s environment. And the recessions really weren't bad. And so we may have a little recession. It may be delayed. this would not be a terrible thing for the economy. So it's not something to be feared. In fact, it creates opportunity, especially when we look at where the markets are at this point in time.
Well, that's a lovely light to shine on this thing. The recessions aren't always that bad. You almost make it sound like a recession is a good thing.
It's an important thing because it's like breathing, right? You can't always inhale. You got to exhale at some point in time. It's like the tides. It's like the waves. It's the business cycle. Now, like I said, the business cycle has not been repealed.
By the way, John, one of our listeners just texted in and said, I've never heard so much talk about the recession that never seems to come. What do you say about that?
It takes a while for it to shape up. And because this business cycle is so well known, as soon as the interest rates inverted, there was talk about a recession. Remember, there is a delay, about a two-year delay from the time of the inversion to the time of the recession. Sometimes it can be really short of 12 months, but you're looking at 18 to 24 months. So, yes, it feels like, hey, we keep talking about it. Is it going to be here? And it's not so much the issue of the recession that we should be thinking about as investors. It's really the issue of the pricing in the stock market. Where do we take, you know, what do we do with our investment portfolio? That's really the issue. That's a good question. I'm glad that they texted that in, because a lot of people are feeling that way. Is it ever going to get here? And maybe it won't, but the odds are it will.
So what will the impact be on our investments then?
Well, usually, again, the stock market sells off about 6 months prior to the recession, and that's when the stock market can see, hey, pretty clearly we're going to go into this. So it still comes back to the Fed. And what did the Fed do this week? They raised interest rates again, right? The Fed decision up 0.25%. So after the June pause, remember in June they paused, the Fed speak after that was predominantly about, you know, two more rate hikes. And here's, you know, what Powell said. He said that, you know, labor is strong. We're at 3.6% unemployment. Now, you know, these are his comments here just this last Wednesday. Listen to this. Wage growth is slowing, but inflation remains well above our target of 2%. The process has a long way to go. Inflation remains well anchored. High inflation creates significant hardship. We remain committed to 2% inflation. It will take time. We require a period of below trend growth. When we're looking for moderating growth and assessing further rate hikes, and rates are not coming down for a year. So what do you take from that? It sounds like they're going to raise rates maybe again.
Yeah.
That would not surprise me, and that pressures.
But are you also suggesting then that the market will come down? There's this 12-month, 18-month lag that you're talking about, and that pretty soon, look, we're within 5 percentage points of the all-time high on the Dow. The S&P's had a nice run, the NASDAQ. So are you suggesting then that pretty soon you should position some of those assets in more conservative positions so that when the market does go down, I know this sounds like market timing, but I'm hearing what you're saying. At some point, you should put it in more conservative things.
Yeah, so very, very good question, right? And this is the crux of this. So people are seeing rallies. That's great. Do they need to harvest some of that? Maybe they do. Is the market going to make a new high this cycle or not? I don't know. I can't predict that. That's too short on the timing. But we know this. There will be a recession. There will be a pullback. So the question is this time to get a little bit more defensive? And I think it's time to start thinking about this. Yeah. So we always want to make sure the one to three year money is out of the market, right? But money that you need 3 to 5 years from now, maybe that now should start to be pulled out, depending on how aggressive or conservative you are. This is a good time to be harvesting some of those gains, making sure that 3 to 5 year money is on the sidelines or at least in bonds.
But, you know, if you've been dollar cost averaging, the nest egg gets bigger. And since you were buying when the market was down so much, at least now you're finally starting to realize some of the, I don't know if profits is the right word, but put it this way. I know plenty of people whose retirements were at 50% of what they had saved when the market went down during the pandemic. And now they're at 95%. They've almost caught up. And now you're telling us, oh, that was as good as it's going to get. Now it's going to go back down again. And they feel like they're so close to finally breaking even.
Well, again, if that money is 10, 20 years down the road, they don't need to do anything. It's about that money that you need in the shorter period of time. Don't get lulled into a false sense of security that this thing's just going to continue to go up and go up and go up. So, and if you've been dollar cost averaging, you're actually sitting with gains at this point in time.
Sure,
because
you've
been buying all the way down and all the way back up again.
I understand that. But I mean, you're right. You were buying when it was cheap, but it's still your portfolio. This is what a lot of people tell me. Their portfolio is just now having caught up to, they're not feeling rich. They're feeling whole. You're suggesting that you might get defensive now because the roller coaster is probably going to go back down a little bit.
Yes. And again, I'm not saying take all your money out of the market. It's know what money you need in the next 5 years and just make sure that's not in the market now at this point in time. And again, you've got time. You don't have to sell today.
No.
But this is the time to start assessing that and thinking about that.
5 years, you think. So the money that you're going to need for the next 5 years. But if you've got money in the market and you think, well, I don't care what happens to that for 7 years, I'll go down, keep buying, and it'll eventually come back up. But you think that window's that long, huh?
Yeah, I do, because you're taking a look at, you know, maybe the market starts to sell off in 6 months, maybe it's 12 months, and then you go through the recession, so maybe you have a year of the down and back up again. So, yeah, again, you don't want to put that, at this point in time, I don't think you want to have that 3 to 5 year money in the market. 7 year money, that's fine, keep dollar cost averaging, let the thing run.
Do you think there's an area where it is smart to have your money now, small cap or international or energy, banking?
Yeah, so the broad market, the large cap, you know, that's really had a nice run here, and the market is starting to play catch up on the rest of the market, the rest of the stocks, small cap, and we're seeing that in the indicators. The last 6 weeks have been pretty good for small cap, beating large cap. Still, you know, don't forget about international. It's easy to forget about that because of, you know, everything seems to be concentrated on the U.S. Still, there's an opportunity in oil. This could be years. And oil is also a feedback loop to inflation. And here's a couple of things. We haven't refilled the SPR yet, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. We need to do that. We can't leave it at this level. Oil companies have continued to cut their spending, which means less production in the future. That's not a good sign for inflation. So there's going to be some of that inflation pressure there. And these stocks are cheap. They've got good, strong cash flow. Dividends are supported. So I think there's an opportunity still there. I know it's not popular, but oftentimes what's not popular is a great place to put some of your investment money to work.
I got about 60 seconds left, and I don't want to get into the election, but that always impacts the markets and the economy. It seems like the government is sure willing to spend money. The Biden administration's poured a lot into infrastructure. Do you think that the election, the next presidential election, is going to change the math of what you've been talking to us about?
No, I don't think so. What's interesting is, you know, there's a lot of studies on this. We've done some studies on this. And the markets really seem to be independent of politics and independent of which party is in control. It's very interesting. We've had good markets in both administrations, bad markets in both administrations.
This administration is spending money, though. Do you think that the Biden administration plans are helping or hurting the market right now?
They're helping right now as we're getting some stimulus coming in, but ultimately this makes it harder on inflation. This is going to be an inflation fight, I think, for at least a decade. Doesn't mean we're going to stay at high inflation, but it's going to be something that will be persistently there to deal with.
Understood. And that's because of all of the money that came into the market as a result of the pandemic, though, right? The stimulus and so forth?
Yes, but it's also we continue to borrow a lot of money for spending, and we have to now borrow a lot of money just to pay the debt on our just to pay the interest on our debt. You know, $34 trillion is an awful lot of money.
It is to me. John Beaver is the president of Phase 3 Advisory Services. Phase3advisory.com. Always interesting, John. Thanks for your thoughts today.
You're welcome. It's always good to be with you.
We couldn't do an episode of this show without talking about AI, or any show for that matter. David Steinberg is the CEO and co-founder of Zeta Global. David, thanks for joining us on WGN. How are you?
I'm well, John. Thank you so much for having me.
You guys are a cloud marketing tech company, actually co-founded with the ex-Apple CEO, John Sculley, right?
Yep, I had dinner with John just last night. John and I co-founded it 15 years ago.
You weren't doing AI 15 years ago, though, right? AI has only been around for about 15 minutes.
Sadly, it's actually not just been around 15 minutes, but it has not been around 15 years. the premise of the company to found it was to simplify marketing and put multiple point solutions into one technology stack. And we really focused on building a very large pool of first-party opted-in data, which is our data cloud. And we really started, John, with automation. And about 7 or 8 years ago, we started investing very heavily in machine learning. And then about 5 years ago, we started heavily investing in artificial intelligence. So I joke, we're not new to the party. We're not one of the 15-minute guys, but we certainly didn't think about it 15 years ago.
So then tell me, how have you been using artificial learning for your clients? How would Toyota or Haynes or somebody come to you, and what would you give them?
Well, so we've got 240 million plus Americans who have opted in to be in our data cloud. And what we do is we protect all of our clients, all of those individuals, with what we call a Zeta ID number. So nobody's personally identifiable information is ever exposed. And we're looking at what everybody in the data cloud is reading, what they're researching, their transactions, where they go, all of that. You're talking about, call it a trillion marketing signals a day. No human can process that much information. So what we're doing is feeding it into algorithms that then build an intent-based score. So do you intend on getting a new credit card? But our platform can add layers like, and will you be credit approved? Or are you actively in market for a particular type of card? Same thing with an automobile. Are you in this geography, because we know where you live, and are you looking for a red convertible? And if you are, what can you afford? Can you afford our clients' products? And would you be credit approved for the financing? All of that goes in before we start the marketing. So one of the greatest quotes in marketing is, I know 50% of my spend is a waste of money. I just don't know which half. Our entire strategy is remove the half that's a waste prior to going into marketing. So our data plus our artificial intelligence allows us to very efficiently lower the cost of creating, maintaining, and monetizing customers for very large enterprises.
David,
and that's
how
we use AI.
Is this how then on Facebook or just on any internet search, I'm on a web page and I'll see an ad pop up that is for something that in fact I'm interested in or was talking to my friends about? People think that's the device listening, but maybe it's this algorithm which has, remember, we're checking boxes saying, yes, you may share my information. You've got a lot of data points now about how I'm living my life. Is that the manifestation of what we're talking about?
Well, the answer, John, is we can then market to the consumer across any methodology. So it could be social. It could be display, as you just outlined. We could show you a television ad that night if you're watching connected TV or any of the digital TV platforms. We can do all of that. But the beauty of it is that, and you know what I always say, it's like, you're going to have to see marketing on the internet. If it went away, every publisher and every platform that you care about would disappear. So you might as well see stuff that's relevant to you.
I agree.
And that's what we're really trying to do, right? So it's a big part of it. The other thing, and I have this conversation with my wife and her friends and everybody, like, your devices are not listening to you. It is other information you're sharing. But the other really interesting thing is mind share, right? So you might have the same ad in front of you 3 or 4 times, but you never notice it because it wasn't on your mind. But if you've just had a conversation about it, you're now going to really notice it, that ad, because it's top of mind. So it is both ways.
I get that, but that's not brand new. What is the new layer that AI adds to this? We have in mind ChatGPT writing commercials. Heck, SAG-AFTRA is worried about them writing whole movies. So how has AI made what you're talking about either more predictive or more powerful?
Well, a lot of it is first and foremost coming out of the evolution of technologies just over the last 20 years, right? So Moore's law that processing power will double every 18 months. Bezos's law, the cost of storage will cut in half every 12 months. All these different things allow machines to make decisions faster. They're now reporting infrastructures that we run that can make a decision on whether to serve an ad to somebody or not in a hundredth of a millisecond. That same decision 20 years ago, John, would have taken 5 hours. So the ability to build algorithms that can synthesize massive amounts of data into real-time decisioning has been a major change. So at Zeta, one of the biggest things we've invested in is the processing power that gives us the ability to do that on behalf of our clients. Now, if you think of generative AI, it's a little bit different, right? There's a lot of natural language processing that's going into that. And there's a lot of industries that it's really going to affect. You think about the first big wave of labor change in the United States really started around blue-collar manufacturing, right, where you started to see jobs move overseas. And a lot of that was also information technology-based, and people don't think of it that way. But if I owned a factory in India 100 years ago, and I needed to tell them that a product we were making was no longer in style, we need to make a new product, I'd have to write them a letter. And that letter could take a month to get to India. Then the factory floor manager would have to reply, well, we can't change on a dime. We need to do this, this, and this. And that takes another month to go back, right? When you could send those changes in real time electronically, that allowed the labor pool to start to move. The next big move was information technology, call centers, programming, that type of stuff. I think the next big evolution in sort of job change is going to be, you're going to look at more white-collar ecosystems, the legal ecosystem, the accounting ecosystem. Other areas are going to be heavily affected by generative AI. And I think that's where you're going to see the biggest step changes from what's coming out of generative versus what we look at as the more traditional algorithms.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to David Steinberg from Zeta Global. I'm out of time, David. Give me 30 seconds on what you would say to the people for whom that last statement is terrifying.
You know, it's hard in 30 seconds, but if you look at the Gutenberg printing press, if you look at the internet, the telephone, the computer, in every case, we said that these were going to destroy jobs as we know it. And in every case, the people who embraced the technology succeeded, and they created far more jobs than they destroyed. So to me, I see AI, if embraced by an employee, as a tool to make them more productive and show their employer that they can be better with it than the company could be without them and AI combined. And I think it's an opportunity.
The company is called Zeta Global, Z-E-T-A. David Steinberg, the AI industry expert and marketing guru, is the CEO and co-founder there. David, I hope you can join us more often. This has been fascinating. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, John. Love to come back.
More business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago City Council allies of Mayor Brandon Johnson are trying to get a real estate transfer tax hike placed on the 2024 primary ballot. They're looking to advance a key promise from the mayor's progressive campaign 8 months after similar efforts failed under Lori Lightfoot. It's being called a mansion tax because it would apply to homes selling for more than $1 million. Those homes would be taxed at a higher rate, and the revenue that's generated would fund homeless services. Democratic leaders, including Governor Pritzker, opposed the plan. Advocates say it could create tens of millions of dollars for those services. A developer wants to build 2,600 apartments on the southern end of Goose Island near the yet-to-be-built Bally's Casino. Crane says the early plans include 3 50-plus-story residential towers at 700 West Chicago. The site is right across the river server from the casino project. The apartments would be mostly rental units. The development would need approval of the Chicago City Council. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food and Steve Alexander.
It's a Mr. Fizz Friday, but we are bumping Jim to Monday because amid the horrors of war, and it is horrible as we hear daily from Joseph Lindsley, Ukrainians need to eat, and we'll check in again with one of the farmers growing the food over there after I thank the Chevy Silverado HD for sponsoring us. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Nick Gordachuk is with us again. He farms about 1,500 acres near Kyiv, raising potatoes and sunflowers. Right now, he's harvesting wheat.
And it was quite dry, so the yields are not so high, but also the prices are very low. I would say $110 per ton.
Oof, that's under $3 a bushel, U.S. At the Chicago Board of Trade right now, wheat's going for more than $7.
For me, a profit center is potatoes, and the rest of the crops, if we sell them break even, I would be happy.
And he says fortunes vary by size of farm.
For the smaller farmers who have 5, 10, 50 hectares, it's much more difficult. What we see now, many farmers will not have money to pay the loans. And of course, banks are very unhappy with restructuring the loans, etc., but they have no choice. If they don't restructure the loans, they will simply lose everything. At least they have a hope that after the war is over, they can get their money back.
And that's a lot of stress, which makes me think about farmer suicides, which is an issue over here. Is it over there?
Very seldom, I'd say. Ukrainians, and in general, Eastern Europeans, are known for its survival strategies. But it's quite heavy on many Ukrainians. You know, the sirens, the explosions, and living away from your family. I think it's also one of the part of the Russian strategy to make you mentally disbalanced. People cannot sleep at night because of the bombings and because of the alarms. Then the whole day it's completely non-productive.
Ukrainian farmer Nick Gordachuk, who remains grateful for support from the West.
Not only the military and financial support, but also moral support. Thanks to you. And the best regards to you and your listeners.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. All the best to you. On the food calendar, today is National Milk Chocolate Day. Tomorrow is National Lasagna Day and National Chicken Wing Day. And Sunday, it's National Cheesecake Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Hey, in Halstead, they've got a sidewalk sale every year. And here it is, the weekend once again for it. Let's tell you a little bit about that. Robin Hammond, the vice president of the Lincoln Park Chamber of Commerce, is on the line. Thanks for joining us, Robin. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
So what are you doing? When are you doing? Where are you doing it?
So this weekend, we have our Armitage Halstead sidewalk sale. It'll be on Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. each day. And we have, it's fantastic. We have 26 businesses that are participating, and you'll find great deals from, you know, you'll find beauty products, fashion, food, beautiful gift items. So it's wonderful, and it's such a great opportunity to, you know, to of course visit favorites, Artifact, Lori's Shoes, but there's also a ton of new businesses to visit as well. So yeah, we look forward to seeing everyone.
So this isn't merchants like a juried show where people come into town. This is local businesses that are out on the sidewalk displaying their wares. Is that it?
That's it. That's exactly it. And you'll find all sorts of discounts on merchandise, special offers, some promotions. We'll also have Heyday Skincare will be there with a hydration station, so you can get a free water bottle. But yeah, these are all businesses that are in our neighborhood and inviting people in to see what's happening.
The weather's going to break for you, too. I mean, 97 today, but then 82 maybe or so tomorrow. So,
perfect. Perfect.
I heard you say that. If I want to know more, how can I just get all the hours and the reminders? Where do you want to send us today?
You know, you can visit our website, lincolnparkchamber.com. You'll find all of the information there, as well as a map of all the locations.
And is it today or Saturday and Sunday?
It's Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Perfect. LincolnParkChamber.com also works. Robin Hammond, the vice president of the Lincoln Park Chamber of Commerce, Taste of Armitage, Halstead, and more. Robin, good luck. Have a great weekend.
Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.